world you are, and welcome to Information Week Live for the week of March 8th, 2015. I'm your host, Kurt Franklin, and we have a great show for you today. Now, we're going to be talking about a lot of different things with a number of different editors. Before we do, though, I want to remind you that in addition to all of the great articles we have at Information Week and all of the amazing radio shows we have, there is also a live portion to what we do. That is Interop. Interop Las Vegas, connecting the IT community, will take place from April 27th through May 1st, 2015, at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Convention Center in spectacular, scenic, family-friendly Las Vegas, Nevada. Now, if you enjoy what we do here at Information Week, if you get great value from the articles and the conversations around them and from our radio shows, then you absolutely positively want to make plans to be in Las Vegas for Interop. Now, to get more information and to register for Interop, please go to www.interop.com. Now, speaking of Interop, you know, it's not our only show. Next week, I will be live at another conference produced by UBM. That conference is Enterprise Connect. It's going to be taking place in Orlando, Florida, at the Gaylord Convention Center. So plan on hearing me talk about Enterprise Connect next Friday. I'm going to have plenty to say about the world of unified communications and enterprise communications in general. It's a great conference, and we'll be bringing you all the great news, both at Information Week and at Network Computing. Well, to get us started today, we're going to call on Information Week Executive Editor Doug Henschen. Doug, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hello again, Kurt. Good to be here.
Well, we are pleased to have you with us, and this has been kind of a busy week for you, hasn't it?
Well, it has. The big Apple Watch announcement, which I wasn't front and center on, but I caught up on an enterprise app that's going to debut on that watch when it ships on April 24. And I also, in the wake of last week's IBM acquisition of Alchemy API, followed up with an image gallery of 10 new jobs for cognitive computing, which is what IBM Watson is all about.
Ooh, cognitive computing. I want to talk about that in just a minute. But before we do that, I'm fascinated by this enterprise application you found for the Apple Watch, because I've seen a lot of the coverage for Apple Watch this week, and pretty much everyone says, hey, this is just an overpriced consumer toy. But you're saying that someone actually already has an enterprise app out for the Apple Watch. What's that all about?
All right. Well, Salesforce has been early on this wearables thing. They came out with a Salesforce Wear developer pack last year, and they were supporting things like Google Glass and Samsung Gear 2 smartwatch, and then they added later in the year, as more of these things proliferated, like Epson, Mavirio, smart glasses and Jawbone Up activity trackers and Oculus Rift virtual reality glasses. As these things started coming out, they added them. And, of course, the minute that Apple Watch was announced, they added a developer pack for Apple Watch. So they were immediately glomming onto this and saying, hey, this is cool. I agree with you that you know, this watch is tethered to an iPhone for its connectivity to the internet. So I'm like, well, if you got to have that phone in your hip pocket anyway, what are you really going to do on the watch? But, you know, there's some pretty good screenshots. The story on InformationWeek.com is Apple Watch meets Salesforce Enterprise Apps. There's screenshots on there of the two native apps that they're going to debut when that watch starts shipping April 24. It'll be available on the iTunes store, I guess, or the Apple store. One is for their analytics cloud called Wave, which was just announced at Dreamforce last year. And the other one is their Salesforce One mobile app. And, you know, the idea is that there are little tidbits of information that you might want to surface on the watch where you don't have to bring out the phone. You might be in a conversation with somebody. You don't want to be as disruptive as sitting there staring at your phone, but you can get an alert on your watch and just tap, let's say it's an approval for some sort of expense request or an approval for a discount for a customer. Or say it's a salesperson that's going into a sales call, they're riding up in the elevator, they don't want to like reach out for their phone and dial it, but they can see that there's an appointment indicator on their watch for that call, and they can have sort of favorited KPIs or favorited metrics that they like to see before they go on a sales call. So they click on it, and they'll see maybe how many outstanding service calls that company has, how many outstanding deals that they might have, and how much money is at stake in those deals. So when that salesperson is meeting with this client, they're not cut short because, hey, you know, we've got this backlog of all these of service issues with your company, and what's up with that? Or, you know, he might not realize, you know, how much money is at stake in some of these outstanding sales deals. So that was kind of interesting.
You know, it does seem interesting. I'm wondering if one of the things that will play into the acceptance of the apps on the Apple Watch is the increased size of the phones themselves. You know, I have to admit, I'm thinking about one of the iPhone 6 Plus systems, and I can imagine wanting to leave that in my bag rather than pulling it out of my pocket every time something happens. So as long as the connectivity will stretch from your laptop bag, your backpack, or your satchel to your wrist, that could play into it as the different screen
sizes.
I talked to
Peter Coffey, one of their strategy execs there, and he described, you know, the iPhone or iPhone 6 is sort of the interim size device now, with a tablet being the large interaction. And he said, if you're in a conversation or something, you really don't want to be sitting there glancing at your phone. But the watch, you can be a little bit more discreet. Say if you're in a meeting, and you can do a little bit of drill down. So there's also on the analytic app, you can have your favorite, you know, KPIs or charts. And you say it's on sales or something, you can tap in, there's push-tap technology that they have, Taptic Engine is what Apple calls it. He says it's really good, and that they're talking about bringing that Taptic Engine to the iPhones now. And so you can push down, and it drills down into the data a bit, and you can, you know, if you're looking at a sales stat, you can find out what you're doing in your region or, you know, how far you are off your sales goal. So sounds like it's a... some value where you can do some things and have an interaction that's different than what you'd experience on the phone.
Sounds fascinating, and I have a feeling we're going to see a lot more of this kind of thing in, say, the next 6 months.
Absolutely. I think I think Kelly Sheridan is doing a roundup of some other enterprise apps that are showing up on the Apple Watch.
Well,
look for that on informationweek.com.
We certainly will. Kelly's not going to be able to be with us today, but we always keep an eye out for what she's writing, just like we do for you and the rest of the great enterprise writers at Information Week. Well, speaking of that, we've got just a couple of minutes left, but you mentioned Watson, and that's something I'm always fascinated to see Watson mentioned when we're not talking about some sort of game show. So what's going on with IBM and Watson?
Well, they're really trying to commercialize Watson. They're trying to come up with, you know, real practical things that it can do. And part of that is getting it beyond these long training phases. To play Jeopardy, they took a long time to train it. So IBM itself is focused on a few sort of building blocks, Watson Discovery Advisor, Watson Engagement Advisor. These are good starting points for apps. But then they've also opened up this vendor partner community of developers that are building cognitive apps. And to accelerate that and to bring a bunch of services to their IBM Watson developer cloud, last week they acquired Alchemy API, which is this another sort of cognitive computing type company that has a bunch of APIs and services that something like 40,000 developers were using. And a lot of them were around natural language processing, the ability to sort of understand text and also convert it to voice, which is something that Watson can do, and Watson can go from voice and convert it to text, much in the way that, you know, Watson spoke during the show. So they have a bunch of new services from Alchemy API, and another specialty that Alchemy API had was machine vision, this ability to understand images, you know, process images, figure out what's going on in that image, what is the subject of that image, and to discern things like, you know, if it's a fish or a cat, is it a pet or is it a predator? Is an example that can actually analyze and kind of understand what's going on in images. So in this image gallery, 10 new jobs for cognitive computing, things show up like sort of advanced behavior analysis, where you might be able to understand the intent of somebody visiting an e-commerce site, for example, beyond just the simplistic sentiment analysis of positive or negative. You want to really, are they ready to buy? What are they interested in buying? There's applications that partners have developed, like shopping assistance. When people come to e-commerce sites are great for selection and value, but they're not so good at doing what a salesperson would do, which is ask a bunch of questions and help connect buyers to the products that are most appropriate for their needs, particularly when they're sophisticated products. So there's this company, Fluid, that built a Fluid XPS app for expert personal shopper that I think the North Face was experimenting with to help, you know, skiers and campers sort of sort through technical gear that might be hard to figure out in just an e-commerce site. There's also a sales assistant app that is sort of a training app that helps salespeople at retail stores kind of learn before they hit the sales floor to be able to make that connection for customers. There's all sorts of interesting apps in there. There's customer service, sophisticated customer service, USAA, the insurer for veterans, is using that. When military personnel are thinking of leaving the military, they have all sorts of questions about housing and insurance and finance, and they have USAA is using Watson on their website and on a special mobile app for these veterans considering going civilian to answer detailed questions and help connect them with, you know, Department of Defense documents that can be really obtuse and hard to sort through. This technology sorts through and finds the most appropriate resources for them. So there's all sorts of interesting examples of that, where the cognitive computing technology is sorting through a lot of and varied information and trying to connect that to what really people are after. Tough job.
Tough job, but it sounds like you've done a great job of covering it as usual, and I have a feeling this is not the last time you'll have an opportunity to write about Watson. It sounds like they're going to be trying to move it into a lot of new areas to, as you say, commercialize the whole thing.
Yeah, the ones that IBM itself is going to go after are the high-value ones, like medical, like drug research, and particularly finance. I talked to executives late last year, and they said a lot of financial services apps are what they're going to be going after. They have to, you know, IBM needs to make some green these days.
Oh, don't we all? Well, Doug, do you have any idea what you're looking forward to, or is next week going to be a complete surprise for all of us?
No, next week I will be at the Microsoft Convergence Conference. That's Monday, Tuesday. That's their show around their Dynamics ERP and CRM products, which are on-premise and in the cloud and compete with Salesforce and SAP and Oracle and such. So that's Monday, Tuesday. And then on Wednesday I'm going to be at the Spark Summit in New York. That Spark is the high is a sort of big data analytics platform, open source, very hot right now, and so I'm curious to see what some leading adopters are doing with it.
Outstanding. We'll look forward to seeing all your coverage. I know you'll be writing all of these things up for Information Week, but where should people follow you on social media to get that up-to-the-minute news as you go through these conferences?
Well, that's D. Henschen at Twitter, and I'm also on LinkedIn at Doug Henschen, so you can post my stories both spots.
Outstanding. Well, Doug, thanks so much for taking time out of a busy schedule to be with us today on Information Week Live.
All right. Have a nice weekend, folks.
That was Doug Henschen, executive editor here at Information Week. And Doug has his finger on the pulse of all the big enterprise applications. He does a great job of covering it. I'm looking forward to having a chance to see Doug at Interop. All of the Information Week editors are going to be there. And then the week after that, Doug and I will both be at SAP's Sapphire Conference, their big thing, bringing you information from that show. Well, we turn from enterprise software to the world of security and our weekly dose of scare the willies out of you with our favorite mistress of fright, Sarah Peters from Dark Reading. Sarah, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us, has this been a particularly scary week, or has this been a week where the good guys were pulling ahead in the race to get at or protect our data?
Well, I would say the tail end of last week, the good guys were ahead, and we didn't talk last week, so I can fill you in at the very tail end of last week first and then tell you how the bad guys got back ahead this week. How's that?
Oh, please give us just a moment or two to feel better before we dive back into the scary stuff.
Okay, well, last week in the UK, they arrested 57 people involved in 25 different operations, 25 different investigations that they were pursuing. So they arrested people involved in network intrusion and data theft, people that had attacked multinational companies and government agencies, people who had DDoSed organizations, people who had developed malware, people who had committed financial fraud. And they got a 23-year-old young man who was accused of stealing information from the U.S. Department of Defense's Global Satellite Communication Systems last summer. They arrested an 18-year-old young man who apparently developed the Titanium and Avenger malware tools. And then also in the U.S. last week, they indicted three men involved in a scheme against some email service providers that led to them stealing over a billion email addresses in the U.S., which they, of course, used to spam everybody here and make millions of dollars. So that's the good news, that they caught some of the bad guys, many of whom still seem to be on the green side of their 20s, which is interesting. We are trying to get more people, more young people into IT security, but unfortunately they do still seem to be attracted to the dark side.
Well, and it's funny because in many ways the dark side gets some great press.
It does.
You know, if you just look at television, I mean, you know, programs like Scorpion are all about people who kind of skirt the shadowy areas before ultimately turning their talents to the good. And the new CSI Cyber is much the same way. Yes, these are people doing good things now, but they all learned their trade with the black cat side of things. And, you know, it's one of those areas where it just seems to be a very romantic kind of area to go off and play with the bad boys for a while.
It is, and it's complicated because there are some organizations that, you know, some enterprises and some government agencies that would absolutely refuse to hire somebody who was considered a black hat hacker, and there are some who wouldn't have a problem with it at all. There are some who might consider it actually a good thing to hire somebody who's kind of a reformed bad guy. And that there's really, really differing opinions. So, and like you said, there is a romanticism about it. That whole, you know, there's the white hats, there's the black hats, and there's the gray hats. And I think that there's most people, maybe not most, but a very high proportion of the security community would place themselves somewhere in that gray area, more so than any of the other fields within IT. So it's a strange place when you're trying to fill open positions on your staff. But well, so that was the good news. There's more bad news if you want that.
Oh no. Well, you know, now that you've made us feel all warm and fuzzy, I suppose we have to take the medicine along with that.
Well, this week, Kaspersky Lab released some new findings about equation group. So equation group is one of those big, super, ultra, mega, impressive, advanced persistent threat kind of organizations. They've got to be a nation state or a nation state backed organization. They've got lots of funding. And what Kaspersky said this week is that they also might be the longest running cyber espionage gang of them all, might have been in operation back into the 90s, which in this racket is a pretty long time ago. Kaspersky had looked at the malware, the big platform that they use now is called Grayfish. I think we talked about it on the radio actually a couple weeks ago, but the predecessor to that was Equation Drug. And what's interesting about it is that, you know, Equation Drug and Grayfish after that, they're not like just a piece of malware. It's not just like any application. It's really like its own operating system, a complex software platform, complete with loads of plugins. It's really kind of an impressive thing when you look at the report. And then what's also interesting is that it appears that the code has a connection with the English language. And the group seems to operate on East Coast U.S. business hours. So that certainly indicates a U.S. connection. Now, Kaspersky has not gone and said this is the U.S. government at work, this is the NSA. They haven't gone and said that. But they have said this is a nation state, and they have said this is English language, and they have said East Coast, you know, Eastern time. So, you know, you have to kind of make your own, come to your own conclusions about that. But this particular group, no matter who's at the root of it, has a lot of, it can do a lot of very terrifying things. And over the past 6 to 9 months, they have gone suspiciously quiet. Kaspersky has not detected them doing much. And instead of that being something they find comforting, they find that terribly scary, because what that indicates to them is that Equation has found a new, or created a new kind of attack that Kaspersky cannot find yet. So more to come on that. For now, you can just feel creepy about it.
Oh, good. Feeling creepy about malware is something that I do very naturally. So I think I'll just, you know, sort of sit over in the corner and suck my thumb while surrounded by unplugged hardware for a while.
That sounds like a healthy response.
Well, Sarah, it sounds like you are staying awfully busy covering the good news and the bad. Anything in particular on your radar screen for the coming week?
Well, you know, as always, there will be new news for us to cover, possibly a new breach. I'm going to be doing something about some of the top social engineering attacks of all time next week, and Kelly Jackson Higgins is continuing her series about the security information sharing centers that have cropped up and kind of how they work and how they're doing. Then we'll also be doing some previews about what security sessions are coming up at Interop next month.
Outstanding. It seems like all roads lead to Interop at this point. And
they do.
We're getting closer and closer. Well, I know that you are also very active on the various, you know, the Tweety Pipes and all the social media. How do people keep up with you for all that?
You can find me on Twitter at Sarah Peters, just SaraPeters. You can follow Dark Reading at Dark Reading. And I also recommend you follow Kelly at KJ Higgins. And that, just log on to darkreading.com every day. Good stuff.
Well, logging on to Dark Reading is something I make sure to do every day, and I highly recommend it for everyone who's listening. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for being with us today. We really appreciate it, and we will look forward to having you on to scare us once again next week.
My pleasure, Kurt. Thanks.
That was Sarah Peters of Dark Reading, a sister site to Information Week. If you want to keep up with all things having to do with information security, then you need to make Dark Reading part of your regular daily information routine. Well, speaking of information routines, one thing that you owe it to yourself to do is read The Geekend every Friday, because it can be a welcome voice of sanity in this crazy world of IT. And to talk about that, we have Dave Wagner, executive editor here at Information Week. Dave, welcome to Information Week Live.
Hi, Kurt. Thanks. Although I'm a little unhappy that you called me sane. I was hoping to be the insane one at Information Week.
Well, it seems to me there are lines out there about the relative position of sanity and insanity in the kind of world in which we live. So consider it a compliment.
Okay.
Well, tell us about The Geekend this week. What caught your eye as being important here at the tail end of another busy week?
Yeah, well, unlike Sarah, who started with the good news and went to the bad news, my article this week will scare the bejeebers out of you, but then it comes with some good news at the end. This year, as some of you may know, we passed a global climate change point of no return. It was predicted that in 2007, if we were not able to get emissions to hold at 2007 levels, we would be at a point of no return where we were guaranteed that global temperatures would rise at least 2 degrees Celsius. In fact, we have so not put those emissions under control that it now looks as though we're guaranteed to have those temperatures rise up to possibly 5 degrees Celsius by 2100, which isn't as far away as it sounds. Think about it this way. Chances are pretty good with medical science breakthroughs. Some of your kids could be alive then, and if not your kids, definitely your grandkids. And the fun about that is if global temperatures rise 4 degrees or more, something like 25% of the world's current population would find their houses underwater. And the World Bank says that there is no guarantee that humans could adapt to temperatures that high. So all of this sounds like a real nightmare. But thankfully, we have some good news. And the good
hit us with the good news.
The good news is that for the last couple of years, there has been a new theory around power management called negative carbon power power plants. And the idea behind those was that we could actually not just create electricity that was carbon neutral, like solar power. Solar power is carbon neutral. It doesn't create new emissions. We could actually create solar power, electric power that pulls carbon from the air. And if we did that, we could reverse these types of catastrophic climate changes. Those have been mostly extremely complicated. There's a power plant design that California is considering that would basically take plant life that sucked carbon dioxide out of the air, and then they would burn that for fuel, and then they would sequester the carbon in the ground, and that would be carbon negative. But they're expensive, they're complicated, they don't work so well. We're not even 100% sure we could sequester carbon that way. But researchers at Caltech have invented an artificial leaf. And I have covered artificial leaves for Geekin before that were designed at creating oxygen. This, however, is true artificial photosynthesis. It takes carbon dioxide, sunlight, and water and turns it into hydrogen. And that hydrogen is burnable as fuel. So what is fantastic about this is it's the first time anybody has created something that has the potential to be a carbon-negative power source.
Okay, now if I am keeping this in line with some of the things that I've heard about fuel cell and hydrogen-powered cars, does it mean that we can have cars that run on sunlight, but only if they're covered in leaves?
No, actually, the leaves don't look anything like leaves. They actually look like mirrors, essentially, a photocell. So what you would do most likely is still keep electric cars, and you would have power plants that powered those electric cars. That instead of just removing emissions, instead of just stopping emissions like a solar plant would, they would actually remove previous emissions. Another alternative would be to put these cells on your car, and then all you would have to do is fill it up with water every once in a while. That could extend its range. You could do it that way, but more likely, you'd want these things in large groups like a traditional power plant system. But you could easily put them on houses. You could put them on industrial buildings. You wouldn't need a large collective farm to do this. They're very small. You can hold one in your hand, but you obviously need more than one to power anything significantly.
That's both encouraging and somewhat disappointing. I was having this wonderful vision of what looked like giant piles of leaves going down the highway. kind of enjoying that vision.
There is an artificial leaf that was designed for trips to Mars that does, in fact, look like a leaf. So if you're looking to do that, it actually is a possibility. It was at the University of Manchester. But this is called an artificial leaf only because it is the first true artificial photosynthesis.
Very cool, very cool. But now I get to enjoy the thought of something that looks like a huge pile of raked leaves hurtling towards Mars, and that's almost as good as the piles of leaves going down the highway. So thank you.
Right.
You've given me delightful images for this Friday afternoon.
Yeah. Well, and here's another delightful thought. These things have the potential. A study was done of negative carbon plants in general, and they added three to an existing California power plan that's already in place, and they believe that California could reduce its emissions by 2045 with just three of these things to minus 178% of what it currently is. That puts it at the pre-1990s level. There's a belief that if you paid a little more attention to these and got more, that we could actually return carbon dioxide on Earth to pre-industrial levels.
Ooh, this does sound like the potential for very good news indeed, then.
Yes, yes. And, you know, while we want to, while real trees and real photosynthesis are something we want to protect, the advantage to this is that we can manage it in ways that it's difficult to do with reforestation and things that we all still obviously want in the world.
Well, I appreciate you giving us a hopeful close to the show after we were scared by Sarah, as she does so well. And then you sort of piled on there for a while. Even though I'm about 70 miles from the coast, I was thinking about the practicality of adding a dock to the back of my house, just in case. You know, that might be a selling point. But it sounds like there is at least the potential of having some technology that will help us out.
I hope so.
Well, Dave, thank you so much. And got to ask, what's on your radar screen for the coming week?
Sure. Well, for tomorrow, you'll see I have a special article in celebration of Pi Day of the Century. And I think that's going to be a lot of fun. Check that out as part of your Pi Day celebration. And in addition to that, I'm getting ready for National Robotics Week, which is April 4th through the 12th. But we're starting to prep up for that now. We're hoping to do a very special week for that, including some radio shows and some really interesting articles.
Very good. And in addition to your articles, where can people keep up with you on all the various social media?
Sure. On Twitter, at GeekAndDave.
Well, Dave, thanks so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you, Kurt.
That was Information Week's executive editor for Community Stuff, Dave Wagner. Dave is always doing some interesting work, bringing fascinating views on technology to the Information Week community. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Information Week Live. I want to remind everyone that in addition to all of the great articles that happen on Information Week and our sister sites, darkreading.com and networkcomputing.com, there is the live face-to-face piece of our happy band. That is Interop Las Vegas. Interop, connecting the IT community, happens April 27th through May 1st, 2015, at the beautiful Mandalay Bay Convention Center in Las Vegas. Be sure to go to www.interop.com to register and get more information on Interop Las Vegas. We're going to be there. We would love to see you there. Now, going forward, we have a ton of radio between now and Interop. There is, of course, the weekly Information Week Live. It happens every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern. There's also Interop Radio, which happens every Tuesday at 3 p.m. You'll want to be listening to those. That's also available as a podcast on iTunes. In addition, starting the first week of April, Dave will bring his own brand of insight, humor, and interviews to radio with IT Life Radio. That will be happening on Wednesdays, starting the first week in April. Keep your eyes open for more information on that at informationweek.com. Now, we have a couple of other special things happening in radio. First, in 2 weeks, we go through a process called Hot Stage for the Interop Net. Now, Hot Stage is where the network is built, put together, checked out, then they put the whole thing in boxes and ship it off to Las Vegas for the show. I'll be there during Hot Stage helping out, recording, and we'll be doing the Hot Stage Diary on radio every day. Keep your eyes open. We'll have information on that here at Information Week. That will be available at Blog Talk Radio and iTunes. And then, of course, at Interop itself, we will have at least two radio shows every single day live from the Mandalay Bay Convention Center. Keep your eyes open. We will have information on that, and we know that you'll want to make those part of your regular listening schedule. Well, for Doug Hinchin, Sarah Peters, Dave Wagner, and all of us here at Information Week, I'm Kurt Franklin saying thanks so much for listening. Hey, we'll see you next time.